This is the Afternoon Magazine. I'm Celeste Quinn. My guest in this portion of the program is Travis McDade. He is a lawyer. He is also an assistant professor of library administration in the College of Law at the University of Illinois, a librarian. Professor McDade says books have four natural enemies: age, fire, water, and theft. That last threat, theft, is the subject of McDade's book, The Book Thief, The True Crimes of Daniel Spiegelman. The publisher is Prager. Travis McDade, thanks for coming in and talking with me this afternoon.
Thanks for having me.
You know, when we think of rare book rooms, we think of them as being careful about their collections, vigilant, guarding them from their enemies. But Daniel Spiegelman was able to steal more than $1 million worth of books, letters, manuscripts from Columbia University. How did he do it?
That's one of the interesting things about the Rare Book and Manuscript Library at Columbia is they were no less vigilant than any other collection, maybe perhaps more vigilant. When I went to interview the folks there, I couldn't, as the rule is, get back into the rare book stack, certainly not the vault where he stole most of the stuff. And that had been the rule. Faculty members and other researchers were sometimes chagrined to find out they couldn't actually go back and peruse the shelves. They had to make specific requests, and then the librarians would bring the material out. And it was quite a locked down organization. I mean, didn't seem to be any way for a person to get in, which is why when they finally discovered these thefts that had been taking place over the course of 6 or 7 months, everyone thought it was an inside job. They didn't think that anyone could come from the outside and do this. The Rare Book and Manuscript Library there at Columbia had one flaw, and that ended up being enough, and it was that they hadn't sealed off an abandoned dumbwaiter shaft that led from one of the lower floors to the stacks there, to the lock stacks. And Spiegelman some way discovered this, I think, just through either serendipity or through walking through the stacks trying to figure out how he was going to get at these books. He had visited the Rare Book and Manuscript Library a number of times and was well acquainted with it, and I think he was just sort of through trial and error trying to figure out how he could get in.
Tell us a little bit about him. What do we know about him? Where did he come from?
He immigrated to the United States with his mother when he was about 12 or 13 in the late 1970s. His actual name is Daniel Kikabidze. He was from Tbilisi, Georgia. And his parents were actors, and he had been raised primarily by his grandmother when his folks were on the road. After his mother and father divorced, his mother brought Daniel to the United States. The way he got the name Spiegelman was his mother married a gentleman named Joel Spiegelman, a very nice guy, Daniel took on that name. He had a rough time. They lived in Manhattan on the west side, and he had a hard time fitting in. He went to a couple of different private schools where he never fit in. Then he went to a public school where he also didn't fit in, and he eventually dropped out of public school and just sort of, sat in his room for several years, just not doing anything at all.
Yeah. Was money his motivation?
I think money was his motivation. Not only did he steal from his family members, but he was convicted of theft in 1983, about 10 years before he committed these crimes at Columbia. He had stolen this guy's credit card number, and he had ordered all these. He'd stolen the credit card number in Europe. He spent some time in Europe with his family, even while he was permanently living in the United States. And he stole this credit card number, came back to the United States, and purchased through mail order a bunch of gold coins that he would later then sell to pawn shops and stuff. And eventually the gentleman, I think he was an English guy, figured out that someone was using his credit card number to buy these gold coins. And they, of course, tracked Spiegelman down to a P.O. box, and he was sentenced to a year in federal prison.
Okay, so he had a track record,
yeah.
Yeah, he's a thief. What's the market for rare library items, though? I mean, here's part of the equation, too. Who's buying?
That's one of the neat things about this. One of the points I try to make in the book is that there is theoretically a market for these rare materials. in the way that there's a market for uncut diamonds and other things, you know, like a Van Gogh painting, if you can find the right buyer. But it's not something that you can take to the street corner and sell because people don't know what they're buying. People aren't willing to pay a lot of money for that. And so in order to profit from stealing these sorts of things, you need to have usually a well-heeled and knowledgeable buyer who either places an order or who you can go to after the fact and say, you know, I have this stuff. But that's how a lot of these people get caught, is on the back end. They try to sell it to someone who is either a dealer or who's knowledgeable. They try to sell it on eBay, and a librarian or something notices that this thing is unique and shouldn't be for sale. It actually belongs in the public library in Austin, Texas, or something. Yeah. And they make inquiries and then they track them down that way.
Yeah, for those folks though who they just have to own something, an Audubon print,
right,
a map, something very rare, something very special. When the crimes come to light and a thief is caught, whether it's Daniel Spiegelman or anybody else, what happens to the people who have illegitimately purchased these items? Do they see any time?
Not really. And that's one of the, what I think is one of the real tragedies, and that I continue to think and write about, of these rare book thefts, is that too often the libraries and museums are rightly concerned with getting the material back that they make these deals, and they say, as long as we get this stuff back, we're not going to force these people to spend, especially the people who've bought these things unknowingly or seemingly unknowingly. We're not going to make these guys spend time in jail. We might force them to reimburse us. Usually what happens is that the dealers or the individuals at worst are on the hook for however much they paid for this. So if they paid $50,000 for, you know, a book of hours or whatever, they have to give it back usually and then aren't reimbursed for that $50,000, which leads a lot of them to not buy these things illegitimately. I mean, on the essential black market. So most people will just go through a legitimate map and book dealers.
Yeah. The story of Daniel Spiegelman takes so many twists and turns. It's believed that he's been able to retain some of the things he stole, even though he was caught. And we don't even have enough time to say what happened after,
right,
after he was ultimately captured. But how was he able to manage to retain some of the things that he stole?
That's sort of a big question. When he was caught in Europe with a couple of items, which eventually made their way back to Colombia, and then he had three lockboxes in different places in Manhattan, and those were cracked and taken by the FBI. All that material eventually made its way back to Colombia. As I talk about in the book, he later escapes from a halfway house, essentially, and he doesn't even, you know, stop to change his socks before he goes and sells some more of this stuff, which he promptly caught doing and rearrested. And that material is then found too. But so much of that stuff just disappeared. And he said that, you know, he was on the loose for about a year with this material. And he says that he just sold it at various points across Europe and just, they couldn't track it down. Now he said that he got rid of all this stuff, mm-hmm, before he was caught trying to sell some more of the stuff again. So of course that was clearly a lie. No one knows it. He just never owned up to it. And there was never any investigation that led to a big cache of materials.
Yeah. Has this case changed the way library collections are protected?
Yeah, I think each time something is stolen, there's an immediate sort of lockdown, particularly at that institution, but also nationwide and maybe worldwide, depending on how much press it gets. So in Columbia's case, they certainly have taken more steps to protect the collection. And each collection, after a big crime like this, sort of assesses their own ways of protecting the material. The problem is, if you can't protect a collection too much, or else you limit access.
Right.
And a collection without access is, you know, a book vault. It doesn't do anyone any good. the purpose of these libraries is to aid researchers. And so there's this delicate balance between giving access to legitimate researchers and not letting people who are trying to steal your material have long private access to this stuff where they can cut stuff apart.
And another issue we don't have time to talk about is, you know, the impact that this has on libraries and researchers and future researchers.
Right.
And it's a crime more than theft, really.
Yes, that's sort of the ultimate point I was trying to make in here, and the ultimate point of this unique federal sentence that's handed down, is that this is not a crime against a particular institution or a particular set of people, but against the society. This is society's written record, and the way we know about ourselves and our past is through these sorts of materials. And when you take them away, even for 5 or 6 years, even if they're recovered, but particularly if you destroy them, there's stuff that we can't learn. That's in those materials. And so it really is genuinely a theft from society as a whole.
Travis McDade, thank you.
Thank you.
Travis McDade is the author of the book Thief, The True Crimes of Daniel Spiegelman. The publisher is Prager.